Canto 10, chapter 13, text 49. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Apurnas Talsinava Dama Talasinava Dhammabi Komalai Sarvagatveshu Puri Punyavad Arpita. So this is the vision of what Brahma said. I skipped a few verses ahead. And we're going to follow the same format. I'm going to put everything in context of Gaur Lila and put us in the mood of what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was doing here. Developing sambandha, relationship, a particular relationship with God. And that's the real definition of mukti. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are 10 subject matters. The 9th subject matter is mukti. And mukti is described as muktir hitva yata rupam swarupena vivastita. What does liberation mean? Yata rupa. You give up the external form. Swarupena vivastita. And you're situated in your swarup, your own form. That's what bhakti means. Bhakti means to come in touch with your true self. It's called self-realization. You're trying to find out who you are beyond everything external that's covering it. All, and that's what liberation is. Even in the days of yore, when the kshatriyas, the warriors, would see the signs that the body is temporary. God speaks loudly in different ways. One of the ways in which God speaks loudly is through old age. Starts maybe with one or two gray hairs after you've been the temple president of Moscow for 3 years. Only in your early 30s. And then the knees, right, Pancharatna? The knees. All of a sudden, people have to sit on chairs. And then, but not so much with the Vaishnavas, at least at the Puriyatra, the digestion goes. And then, it gets worse and worse. Actually, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, my godbrother, once said, you know, our psychology is always, tell me if this is your psychology, in the future we'll get better. right? And the future will get better. He said, but it only gets worse. On that platform, which can never be better, because even if you achieve your goals, if you achieve your goals in the future for the health that you want, for the money that you want, for the relationship you want, for the respect that you want, even if you get it, it's superficial. It's still cheap thrills. It's still being a poor Indian in a village, riding on your broken bicycle with a little tiffin, and going to the movie theater and watching the superhero get the beautiful Bollywood actress. And you'll never get it. And you'll never be that superhero. So it's called cheap thrills. So even if you get it, it's cheap thrills. And, of course, it's temporary, so it's filled with duality. As much happiness as you get from it, that's how much angst, anxiety, this is being taken away. I really feel sorry for Bill Gates. Because we have an expression in New York. If you ain't got nothing, you ain't got nothing to lose. How much anxiety to maintain what you have. Of course, we want to satisfy our desires reasonably. We do that in Krishna consciousness. We want to be peaceful so that we can actually pursue the real happiness. We don't want to be disturbed in terms of our attachments too heavily so that we can't actually peacefully realize ourselves and have a clear mind to do so. But that's not the objective. The objective is not the so-called happy, peaceful life. That's the means for something else. So Krishna consciousness is a very, very practical philosophy. Kamesa nendriya pritir labo jivete yavata. You take what you need. Different people have different needs. You take what you need for the higher purpose of jivasya tattva jigasa, for actually realizing the absolute truth. So this is, Lord Chaitanya was here to get bhakti, get devotion, understand himself. And we discussed that the way to do it is to hear about reality so that you can actually become inspired for it. We don't think reality is so beautiful. Reality is beautiful, but we don't think reality is beautiful. Because reality means you're a servant of God. Reality means that there's someone else in the center and it is not you. One great acharya said, when you go to the spiritual world, it's the land of gurus. The grass is guru. Shanada pi samichena, tarora pi sahishnana, amanina madhanina. The grass is guru. The grass teaches humility. The trees, everyone is guru in consciousness. And you're the only servant. That's your mood. We have a hard time with one. So it's a change of direction. It's a change of consciousness. The spiritual world. And the Bhagavatam will show the reality of that, how beautiful it is. How beautiful it is to actually be the humble servant. That actually the one who is serving the prasadam is in a better situation than the person who runs in at the front of the line to be served first, who asked the server to pick out extra pieces of cheese for his plate, thinking that that's the position of happiness. But actually, the position of happiness is service, and the mood of service never places one in the center. So you have to hear about that, how beautiful it is to change your faith. And the way you hear about that is to hear about the devotees who love Krishna with all their heart, how beautiful that is. And how beautiful it is to serve someone who is eternal, who's real, and is so dear to one. This is the Bhagavatam. It's to give us this inspiration to be who we are. And that's when I say that Prabhupada gave the most beautiful definition of perfection. And I quote it many times, the perfectional state of the living entity is called a devotee. And that's the goal of life. The goal of life is actually to be who you are, to be real, to actually attain who you are and cover that. And you do that by the Bhagavatam. So now let's read a little bit of the Bhagavatam, and then I'll follow the system that I've been following, or my strategy that I was following, is we'll go into the Gaur Lila and discuss how Lord Chaitanya achieved his goal, which is to get a mood of a... What's that? Sri Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhagavatamati? What are we... English?
A consciousness which is saturated with loving feelings for Lord Krishna.
A consciousness which is saturated with...
loving feelings for Lord.
Loving feelings for the Lord. Let's say this together.
A consciousness which is saturated with loving feelings for the Lord.
That's prema bhakti, fully saturated. And that's the objective, and that's the goal, and that's what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to achieve. And we watch his life to understand how he did it. And one of the key components of how he did it was to hear the Bhagavatam. I can't stress this enough when I actually see people's transformation and how they transform. Because we can introduce people to Krishna consciousness, but how do you bring them forward step by step? And my own experience is transformation takes place by hearing. By hearing the Bhagavatam regularly. That's how one actually transforms, gets greater inspiration to go deeper in Krishna consciousness. Really transforms, really changes. So we'll follow that, but first the Bhagavatam. So this part now is a description. Lord Brahma stole the cowherd boys and calves, and then when he came back, he saw the same cowherd boys and calves there, and he was saying, which ones are the real ones? Which ones are the real ones? And he couldn't figure it out, and he was very, very bewildered. And there, Sukadeva Goswami was explaining a very beautiful point that when you show your power to someone who's superior, your own power diminishes. You may think you're big, but it's relative. And when you actually approach God, you actually see the power of God, then you understand in comparison what you are. Just like Brahma's prayers, after we became liberated, we actually saw how powerful Krishna is. Even though he's the supreme engineer of the universe, it's just relative. When we saw how powerful Krishna was, I love this prayer. He said to Krishna, "Who are you and who am I?" He said, just like dust comes through a screen, like light comes through a screen, and you see the particles of dust. Prabhupada in one purport said that they're hex atoms. So it comes through the screen. He said, just like that, innumerable universes are coming through your body. And I am the Brahma on one universe. Compared to you, I'm like a hex atom blowing through a screen. So he said, so who am I and who are you? And that's the realization. That's the first realization of spiritual life. You have to understand how great God is. Because we surrender to that which is superior. So that was his realization. So, he's looking, and he showed his power. And it's so beautiful in the Bhagavatam, it gives an example. It's like he was like a glowworm at night who had to face the sun in the daytime. In a relative situation, you may be in the illusion that you're significant, but in an absolute situation, you have no power. Prabhupada called it material protective agents. They'll all be gone. Or he said, like the snow during the day is very bright, but during the night, it has no potency. So Brahma was starting to feel this, and this is the first step in God realization. You have to feel your dependence, which is an absolute fact. God makes situations to help us feel that. Because without that, we will never have bhakti or love. So now, what happens is, all of a sudden, these figures of the cowherd boys, they began to manifest their Vishnu forms with the forearms and holding conch shell, disc, mace, and flower in their arms, helmets on their heads, earrings, and this is millions of cowherd boys are manifesting Vishnu forms. Earrings, garlands of forest flowers. On the upper portion of the right side of their chest was the emblem of the goddess of fortune, Srivatsa. They wore armlets on their arm, Kastuba gem around their neck, which were marked with three lines like a conch shell, and bracelets on their wrists, with bangles on their ankles, ornaments on their feet, and secret sacred belts around their waist. They all appeared very beautiful. Every part of their body, from the feet to the top of their heads, was fully decorated with fresh, tender garlands of tulsi leaves, offered by devotees in worshiping the Lord by the greatest pious activity, chanting and hearing. So Brahma sees all the Vishnu forms, and around each Vishnu form he sees ecstatic kirtan. He sees that all the devotees doing kirtan to this, to each one. And because this is the main activity of love, is expression of it. That's why kirtan is the sarvashreshtha, the best of, it's the expression of love. Kirtan means when the bhava in the heart is expressed. And if you want to say with sankirtan, when the bhava in the heart is expressed through the discipline of music. And when it's done with others, it's called sankirtan. So there's sankirtan going on. There's kirtan. And they're pure devotees. So Brahma is just looking at this. The word Bhuri Punyavad Arpita is significant in this verse. These forms of Vishnu were worshipped by those who had performed pious activities for many births and were constantly engaged in devotional service. So this is the pinnacle of devotion. Aho bhatasva pachato guriyan yajivagre vartite namatubhyam. Even if one has one sincere name on his lip, it's considered that he's already bathed in all the holy rivers, studied all the Vedas, he perfected so many things. This is the perfection when finally, out of your heart comes glorification of God. That's the perfection. And that's why, and this is such a beautiful scene, when the Kali is serpent, is smashed by Krishna, and his hoods represent the false ego. Because the nature of the false ego is that it always just comes up even though it's smashed. That's the nature of the false ego. We all go through this in life. We become diminished. Oh my God, what a mistake, what a fool I am. I can't believe I did this. I'm so sorry. It's so difficult. I'll never do this again. I'm so sorry. Wow. Actually, for someone to be the realization that I have, the utter humility, the ability to actually chant the name in Trinada, peace and Ichena. And then it becomes, and then the same thing happens. But the pinnacle of, so the Kali is serpent. Krishna was dancing on his hoods, and he would try to raise one again. It's the false ego. And what happened is, when all the hoods were smashed, then he could actually hear and remember the good instructions that were given. Because the false ego covers our understanding of reality. That's why when you go to the Holy Dham, you worship Lord Shiva, because the presiding deity of the false ego, if you think you're the center, you can't see who is the center. So the false ego puts you in a position where you can't see the truth and you can't actually hear the truth. And when the false ego is crushed, finally, then you can actually remember the truth. I've actually been in Vrindavan when I see people of cancer, apparently about to die, and you see how the false ego comes out. Krishna has already announced that your stay in this body is finished. But the false ego says, no, there's something I can do to control the world. Even when it's gone, there's something in the world I can do there's something I can do to still control. And then at a particular time, what will happen is, because of all the good instructions that someone hears, when the false ego gets crushed, which says, no, you are not the controller. You are not the controller of this world. And when one actually comes to accept that, then what happens is one begins to actually hear and remember the instructions that actually Krishna is the controller. And when you become a devotee of Krishna, then you want to satisfy the desires of Krishna. And then you actually become, you see people actually almost become liberated. And what does liberated mean? It means that you are accepting the supremacy of God and His will as best. And actually, Sharanagati, or surrender, has six symptoms. And one of the symptoms is, God is the protector. You have faith that God is the protector. And what does that mean? It means that you have faith that God will do what's best. So when the Kali is serpent, when every hood was smashed, then they remembered what their wives said about Krishna, who is a devotee. And then the wives offered such beautiful prayers. You have an announcement to make? They offered such beautiful prayers. And it's so interesting. It said to Krishna, my husband can't be so bad. He must have performed the service of compassion to others to be able to have your lotus feet on his head. So that's the perfection. So here, Prabhupada is commenting on the word Puri Punyavad Arpita, the greatest pious activity. They must have performed the greatest pious activity to actually have the association of Krishna. Bhakti devotional service is the engagement of those who perform highly developed pious activities. The accumulation of pious activities has already been mentioned elsewhere in the Srimad Bhagavatam 10, 12, 11, where Sukadeva Goswami says, Akam sukham brahma sukha nubhutya dasyam katanam paradaivatena. Those who are engaged in self-realization, appreciating the Brahman effulgence of the Lord, and those engaged in devotional service, accepting the Supreme Personality of God as His Master, as well as those who are under the clutches of Maya, thinking the Lord an ordinary person, cannot understand that certain exalted personalities, after accumulating volumes of pious activities, are now playing with the Lord in friendship as cowherd boys. It's like Twilight Zone, my watch stopped. Anybody know what time it is?
Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Tale Shayam Rupa Kadamaya Dadati Shabdam Sikam Vanchatam Padrubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vaivacha Patihanam Vayevyo
Vasishthayo Namo Namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So I'm going to go a little bit back and try to put everything in context of Puri and of the story. So today you went to Dandabhanga Nadi. Did you ever hear a name that has such a good beat? Dandabhanga Nadi. And it was the Parama Gambhira Leela. So it was the supreme secret Leela. I don't know the supreme secret Leela. You probably heard that today. But I want to say something about it in relationship to what we were talking about today. Parama Gambhira Leela, what happens is Nityananda, he breaks the dunking. Right? And let me ask you a question. There are two categories of beings that are free from external designations. Who could name the two categories of beings that are free from external designations? Bhagavad Well, the eternally bound are pretty much eternally bound by designation. I thought the Bhagavad Purana would have the answer. Anybody else? Come on. Two beings. Aditi.
Devotees.
What? The saints and the fools? That's in the Bhagavad Purana Sampradaya. Anybody else? What? The Lord and devotees. What a designation. There's something external to yourself that limits yourself. It puts you in a particular place. So there's external. And who knows the verse that's quoted in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that specifically says that pure devotional service is beyond any external limitations. Sarvapati Vinirmuktam Tatparatvena Nirmalam Rishikena Sevana Bhaktam. It's beyond Sarvapati, anything external to the self. Anything external to the self, ultimately, that you identify with is external to your soul. Actually, in the greatest dialogue, Ramananda Samvad, when Lord Chaitanya met Ramananda Roy, we know the Leela of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's the devotee. He's the devotee that he's God who's trying to become a devotee. So, becoming a devotee means having those feelings of love for God, and you have to get it from someone who has them. So his Leela is, he's born, he's God, but he's not exhibiting any symptoms of a devotee until he meets his guru. Then he meets Ramananda Roy, and Ramananda Roy asks him a question: can you ascertain which verse is the essence of the scripture? Which verse is the essence of all that, can you ascertain this? And so many good verses are given. Even he quotes Sarva Dharma Parityaja Mam Ekam Sharanam Vijaham Tvam. give up all variety, just surrender to me. And what is Lord Chaitanya say? Eho Maya. It's external. Why? Because renunciation is external to the self also. Being a sannyasi is external to the self. The self is the servant of God. That's who we are. Anyway, so that was also external. So until he got to the point where he quoted a verse, Mukunda? Yane Piyasam. And that verse means? What? You give up everything and you just sit and hear. You just sit and hear. I had a personal realization of this once. There's times of life. There's a book I just read. It's really good. It's called Falling Upwards. And it describes how in life there are crises. Right? And it's a very interesting theory. It's almost like you spend your life building up a cup, a foundation by which you can actually maintain spiritual life. You need a foundation to hold it. But to ultimately have spiritual life, you have to be beyond that also. So what happens is, it's very described that people, and he described it through all literatures, people have crises where everything kind of apparently falls apart, but it's actually moving one deeper and deeper into the understanding of the self. So I had just a little experience like that. Is I can only describe it by the hands, that these were my desires, and it was kind of like to move this way. I wanted to go this way. I wanted to go up in life. You know, that's the way. This is what I wanted. And this is what was happening. And when it goes rapidly, that's called tragedy. When it moves really fast. And your initial reaction is to scream, no, and then kind of stick your hands in reality and try to stop it from happening. You know, you're still in the mood of the controller. And then what happens is when you actually heard the Shastra and heard some information and heard some spiritual things, hopefully you have enough sense to stop speaking happiness and conforming the world to your desires, and you start seeking happiness and conforming your consciousness to God's will, which is in your hands. And that's why we do have crises. Because even if we conform the world to our desires, it's not real happiness. Real happiness is a nice phrase that I read in one book. Happiness doesn't come from the self, it radiates from the self. Happiness is something within, in our consciousness, in awakening it. And somehow or other we have to move in that direction. So the realization I had, when that happens, several times it happens. It doesn't only once. A lot of times there's falling upwards. I remember one time here in Puri also. I was here just with alone practically, just chanting and chanting and chanting and chanting. And another time in Giranagari, I was just in Pennsylvania, I was just chanting and chanting and chanting and chanting. Because what else can you do? And then what happened is a realization came in the heart. A realization came in the heart that what I am doing, which is glorifying Krishna, is an activity of my real self. And everything else I was trying to control was a manifestation of my self. I am at this. The expression of chanting was actually coming from my real self. And what do you know about the real self? The real self doesn't end with the body. So there was some actual relief. There was some glimpse of eternality and relief. So spiritual life means to be free, ultimately, from designation. And I said, I was describing the Kshatriyas or the warriors. When they start to see God speaking loudly that the body is temporary, the warriors, what's the first thing they do? They break their sword. The next thing is they rip off their medals. Then they take off their uniform. They're peeling away everything. And then they began to walk to the north. And they're great Raja Rishis. I feel now I have to tell a story to just get more life in here. Everyone went to the palm of Amiravira. I just stayed there in Maya. So I don't feel as empowered as you by the austerities. But this was... interesting. I was in Vrindavan and there was one Maharaj who was preaching in Iran. He's now, he's not sannyasa anymore, he's now one of the top five most prominent yoga teachers in the world, I think. Named Richard Freeman. His name was Pardi Rajakacharya Maharaj. And he was preaching in the court of the Shah of Iran. And he brought the daughter of the Shah of Iran to the Krishna Balaram Mandir. And then he later came to see Prabhupada. And and Prabhupada was asking him about his activities. And Prabhupada was so happy with the level that he was preaching, who he was influencing, that he was a sannyasi, a renunciate, and he was actually influencing the kings. The richest probably in the world. Prabhupada is so happy that he quoted from Bhagavad Gita. He said, Evam Param Param Prabhupam, because Pradyumna was there and then came and told him. And the way he quoted the verse, I can never forget, he said, and then Prabhupada said to him, Evam Param Param Evam Param Prabhupam Imam Vajarshio Vidahu. I remember he got this. Imam Vajarshio Vidahu. Not under it. Prabhupada said, you're Raja Rishi. The great kings, they were also rishis, they were mystics. And they walked to the north. When they walked to the north, then their eventually they would just give up their body. And they were such mystics that even physically their body was given up. They would stay in their subtle body and they would give up. And the last thing covering the soul is called the false ego, the ahankar. You know what the false ego is? It's a very dangerous thing. Because this is what's going to happen to all of you at the end of your life, if you're not careful. What happens is what the false ego does, it's like a funnel that delimits consciousness. Let's say you get the body of an ant. So your consciousness will be delimited. The consciousness will come through something that shapes and gives it the mood of this little creature. And if it's an elephant, it'll expand like that. And if it's a man, it'll have another thing. And a woman, another thing. And a particular race. So at the end of your life, you see, you can't fit all your karma in one life. Because you have some karma to be the richest person in the world. You have some karma to be the poorest person. It can't fit. And one day you're, you know, the top model, the next life you're the class clown. You can't fit it all in one life. So what happens is at the end of life, God makes the call. And he says, according to your karma, your desires, what's the order of purification that you need? He covers your soul with a particular false ego. He makes that call. And you don't really know what combination of good and bad he's going to give you. So the last thing is the false ego. It's the most subtle element. So self-realization means to get free from all designations, all identities that are external to the self. That's liberation. Muktir hidvayin arupam, and be situated in your sarup. So what are the two beings that are free from designations, anything external to the self? One is called a devotee. Because a devotee means, really a devotee means, you're only identifying with who you are and nothing else. And the only way you can come to that point is to actually desire it. You actually have to desire it. You actually have to, I want to be a devotee. And why do you want to be a devotee? Because you're so attracted to God. Why? Because you hear the Bhagavatam. And you chant Hare Krishna, you become so attracted to God that you want to become a devotee. So intense. It's called lobha, greed. I'm right now overseeing the biography of Iyengar. I worked on it today, that's why I stayed back. It's not an easy person to edit. And have him understood. But then there's a part where he really wants to understand who he is. That desire comes so strongly. I want to know who I am. Not that I want to be something else. I don't like how I am now. I want to be, you know, more beautiful. I don't like I'm a man. I want to be a woman. You want to be who you are. And it becomes so intense. Who am I? That's self-realization. And when one is advanced, and how does that happen? You have to hear. And then once you get that desire, you have to nourish it. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in the Gembira, understanding who he was in one sense. They wanted the mood of Radha, and he was hearing about her love and the height of her love and how beautiful it was. And then chanting is what? Chanting is a prayer. It's coming from the heart. It's a desire. And chanting is separation. Separation from what? Separation from who you are. This is what Puri was for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was hankering for what? For Jagannath. For who is Jagannath? Jagannath is Krishna, in love with Radha. In so much love with Radha that he's in a state of devastation and ecstasy and separation from Radha. So we described before, this is the process. But he lived his whole life. And he traveled and preached for Chaitanya. And he had kirtans all the time. And then he was practicing. He was practicing, chanting the name with a relationship to the name, cultivating that relationship by worshiping the form of the name he's chanting and hearing the stories and the songs of the person whose name he's chanting, and relishing in Tota Gopinath, every day hearing Bhagavatam, at night chanting, hearing Bhagavatam, and hearing Bhagavatam means to hear the things that come from the Bhagavatam. There's so much Goswami literature, it's all based on the Bhagavatam. Sometimes people say, you know, where is this exactly said? There may not be where it's exactly said. It may be there and it may be so deep that great Vaishnavas, I have a little experience myself in studying the Bhagavatam, that if you study it, you see things deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. You see things that haven't been there before. Because it's not just ink and paper, it's God in sound. And we have a relationship with it, it will reveal more and more. Deideshu dulabham adulabham atma bhaktau. The Bhagavatam is deep. I always tell this example of something I saw, which I never read in any commentary, but it became so obvious. After reading the Gita again and again and again and again and again, I saw, wait, there's an exact correlation between the first verse of the Gita and the last verse of the Gita. An exact correlation. Because after we were getting into the Gita and studying the commentaries a little bit, what do you understand about the first verse? The commentators say that the first verse is materialistic vision, right? What did my sons and the sons of Dhritarashtra uvacha? Dhritarashtra's worried. Will I win? Who has a bigger army? Material calculation. Not am I doing what's right, not am I following God's order, but where do I get my advantage? I win if I have more money, I win if I have more power, even if I have to cheat for it, I'll get the advantage. So he was thinking, what did my sons and the sons of Pandu do desiring to fight? The commentators say, he's worried. He's worried. I have a bigger army, but what will... And what is the last verse of the Yatra
Yogeshwara? Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna, Yatra Partha Dhanurdhara.
Can you repeat that second line again?
Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna, Yatra Partha Dhanurdhara.
Can you repeat the last word of the second line?
Dhanurdhara.
What was that?
Dhanurdhara.
Say it again. No, the whole thing.
Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna, Yatra Partha Dhanurdhara, Tatra Shri Vijayo Bhutir Dhruva Nitir Matir Mama.
Okay, translation.
Wherever there is Krishna, the master of all mystics, and Arjuna, the supreme Arjuna, there will certainly always be extraordinary opulence, victory, and morality. That's a rough translation.
That's it. Victory, opulence, and morality.
Morality.
Of this there is no doubt. So compare the two. This last verse is completely spiritual consciousness. And the first verse is material consciousness. The last verse is where there's Krishna, where's devotee, where we're following God's will. That's where success will. I always remember being in the temple in Brooklyn, visiting it, you know, when I first came to Krishna consciousness. And at that time, it was one of the most successful temple. It had the press, it had so many all-star devotees giving classes, and kirtaneers, one after another, Agni Dev, Jai Satchinanda, Vishnu Gurdwara, like the classes, Jadarani, Jayadvaita Swami, you know, it was just one after another. And the famous cooks that were there too. It was all incredible. So I came one day for lunch, And there was a tape that was playing somehow, and a devotee was repeating a class he heard from some. Okay, it was a devotee giving class. It may have been Kirtananda or something. And he quoted Prabhupada. He said that if all my devotees became serious, we can take over the world in 18 days. And then I kind of meditated on that. What does this mean? And later I meditated on it. What it means is success ultimately comes from Krishna. And that if a devotee is not humble, then it's very difficult for Krishna to give him lasting success, because it will ruin his Krishna consciousness. So if the devotees actually could handle it, Krishna would give it to them. And that's probably the most important thing in the success of Krishna consciousness, is that the devotees can be devoted and detached enough to actually achieve the legacy of Prabhupada without becoming influenced by it, as Prabhupada wasn't influenced by his success. One time, Tamal Krishnamaraj was so excited to see how powerful Prabhupada was, he said to Prabhupada, he said, Prabhupada, you should be the king of the world. And Prabhupada said, you advise. And he said, you manage, I'll advise. Anyway, I had a realization here, what I'm going to do for the next 2 days. I think I covered the subject of why Lord Chaitanya was hearing the Bhagavatam. I think I'm just going to go verse by verse and get into this story. And what's coming up is really spectacular, actually. It says that in the relationships, and he sees these beautiful forms of Vishnu, and he sees the devotees around, and he sees the relationship of Krishna to the devotees. And it says Krishna had red eyes, eyes that were reddish, and a smile that was white like a lotus. And what's described is that this represents spiritual passion and goodness. And what spiritual passion means is that when you become pure, God puts the desire in your heart to serve Him. And spiritual goodness means that God maintains that desire. And when Prabhupada is reading this verse, and he's lying on his bed in Vrindavan, hearing this wonderful verse, Prabhupada says, very beautiful. Those Vishnu forms, by their pure smiling, which resemble the increasing light of the moon, and by the sidelong glances of their reddish eyes, created and protected the devotees of their own. Those Vishnu forms, by their pure smiling, which resembled the increasing light of the moon, and by the sidelong glances of their reddish eyes, created and protected the desires of their own devotees, as if by the mode of passion and goodness. So Prabhupada explains this so beautifully, that The passion is the devotee gets a desire to serve within their heart. And then Krishna maintains it. So this is Prabhupada's commentary at the end. And he's laying on his bed. And it's the end of his life. And he's staying in this big, beautiful temple, the Krishna Balaram Mandir. And he's reflecting on his life. And this is what Prabhupada said about his commentary, how Krishna puts the desire in one's heart. And then when he does that, and you're pure enough to actually have Krishna's desire in your heart and not your own, not your desire, I want to be more powerful, I want to be more successful, I want to be the best devotee, I want to be the most famous devotee. But actually, you just want to serve Krishna. And you just want to serve Krishna, and you're praying so deeply, I just want to serve Krishna. And you're praying, what do you want, Krishna? You're Kinkari. Kinkari means gopi. Gopi means Kinkari. What you want, I will do. You put your hands completely up in the air. Tell me what you want from me. And it's not clouded by what's in it for yourself. And when that happens, God's desire manifests in your heart. And you actually carry God's desire purely in your heart, then Krishna maintains his desire. He put it there, he maintains it. That's what Prabhupada said. If all my devotees became pure devotees, we take over the world in 18 days, because they would have Krishna's desire in their heart, not mixed with their own, that would take and exploit the facilities that are given to spread Krishna consciousness, as we have seen, when people are not mature. So Prabhupada said this, in our Krishna Balaram temple in Vrindavan, there is a... No, it's the next page. In Vrindavan, there is a place. Yeah, I want to read before that because it's so nice. Really, this is so beautiful. A pure devotee, however, has no desires. Therefore, Sanatana Goswami comments that because the desires of devotees whose attention is fixed on Krishna have already been fulfilled, the Lord's sidelong glance creates variegated desires in relationship to Krishna and devotional service. In the material world, desire is a product of rajagun and tamagun. But desire in the spiritual world gives rise to a variety of everlasting transcendental service. Thus the word svakartanam refers to eagerness to serve Krishna. Now listen to this. In Vrindavan, there is a temple. There is a place where there was no temple. But a devotee desired, let there be a temple and save a devotional service. Therefore, what was once an empty corner has now become a place of pilgrimage. Such are the desires of a devotee. So this is bhakti. When you have no other desire, and you're actually satisfied to be just a devotee. When you're satisfied just to be a devotee of Krishna, and you have no other agenda, then Krishna puts his own desire in your heart. And then when you manifest that desire, which is Krishna's desire, then you become empowered to spread Krishna consciousness. according to how Krishna wants to use you. Whether it's to make the most beautiful sweets in the world. There was that pure devotee lady, I forgot her name, she lived in England. What? And she just made the most beautiful sweets in the world. Or in simple ways. Or the capacity of it. If we all became serious, then Krishna consciousness would take over the world in 18 days. But if we're not, the world would take over us in one day. Okay, I'm actually going to leave time for questions because I had a realization, a strategy, because you know, I explained to you before I was a coach, before I was a sports coach, before I became a devotee. So I live in a world of strategy. My strategy now is now just to go through the Bhagavatam, the last 2 days, and those verses, and read it. Are there any questions? Yes. Yes.
Srimad Bhagavatam, because sometimes it seems that Srimad Bhagavatam cannot help the devotees.
How to properly hear the Bhagavatam.
And are there any situations when it seems like, for example, we hear from you, inspiring Katha, yeah, that hearing Srimad Bhagavatam solves all the problems and we become more and more purified in the process.
Yeah.
But sometimes you feel that people, you see devotees who just do that year after year, year after year, year after year, and nothing happens. Let's talk about myself.
Can you repeat the question? I'm going to repeat it. How to hear the Bhagavatam, because it sometimes appears that devotees hear the Bhagavatam again and again, year after year, and nothing happens. What? What? It even leads them to degradation.
Okay.
This is the commentary of the husband on what the wife said. Now should we ask your little daughter now what her opinion is? But first of all, I really doubt they were hearing the Bhagavatam again and again and again. Let me give the complete answer. And in terms of, first let's say how to hear the Bhagavatam. You see, you hear the Bhagavatam for transformation. You can read any scripture for power. You can be. We've seen many, many big scholars. I remember there was one Sanskrit scholar in Vrindavan. I was there, right? And he started learning so much that he thought maybe Prabhupada didn't know what he was doing. And he came to Prabhupada and said, you know, bless me that I'll find a bona fide guru. And Prabhupada cursed him. That you won't find for like hundreds of, you know. So it, you know, anything can be misused. Anything can be misused. Therefore, there's a type of reading which I do, and I try to do it every day, besides kind of scholarship reading, and that type of reading is called prayerful reading. And what you do is, you're in the mood of meeting a great sadhu, whether it's Prabhupada, or Sukadev, or whatever personality in the Bhagavatam, and then you put yourself in a mood that, please enlighten me, transform me, change me, give me some instruction that inspires me. And then you take 10 or 15 or 20 minutes and you just read very slowly in that mood of being influenced or transformed. And then when something hits you, you repeat it over 3 times. And then when you complete the book, you shut the book after a certain time and then you pay obeisances. And then what I do is after that I do a little free writing just to, because when you preach, you remember things. I just don't let the pen stop. And just, so anything can be done in the wrong mood. Anything can be what we call is the false ego, that thing that says me can take chanting 64 rounds, reading the Bhagavad Gita. It can take anything in the world for its own personal service. So who knows, the devotee who read, and, you know, maybe they weren't becoming prominent. There's a book I read called The Ladder of Divine Ascent by John Climactus. And he was a desert monk. And he wrote these 33 principles of renunciation. And what he described, you know, he was talking about prestige, giving up prestige. What he described is that sometimes people were in the monastery and they were very renounced. They were in the monastery and they were very, very renounced. And then they thought, well, I'm so renounced, now I'm going to go out to the Sinai desert and perform my bhajan. And he said many of those people left. And the reason he gave is because their renunciation wasn't being fed by the manure of false prestige. Manure is, you know, like the cows and the bulls. It wasn't being fed by false prestige. So we can do so many things for false prestige. So therefore, you know, I don't know the person who left or became degraded by reading the Bhagavad Gita, what his motive was. Was he actually surrendered to Guru? Did he actually change his identity yet? That I am a servant of God, I'm a servant of the center, I am the center. So there's so many things, I mean, that could happen, you know. So all I would say, why, without knowing the specific person, they were not serving God. They were trying to read it to impress people or to become more powerful. And that just doesn't... So something is there. Any other questions? One and then... Okay.
Maharaj, about the false ego, you were telling the story of Kaliya. And how the
story of what?
Of the Kaliya serpent.
Yeah.
You were explaining how the false ego, it always comes up again. And it puts us in a situation where we cannot see the truth and we cannot even hear about it. And then when it gets smashed, we can see the truth at that moment, right? So... how can we, should we pray for getting smashed? Or how do we attract this? Or can we do it by our own? Or, yeah.
Not to bother me.
What?
Not to bother me. Don't pray to bother me.
Okay. Yeah, I would say you don't have to pray to be smashed. It will happen. What you should pray to is to actually transform and change yourself. The world works that way. And what is being smashed? All being smashed means is the world is not moving according to my own desires. And for the world to move according to your own desires, you have to be the controller of the world. So because you're not the controller of the world, and you're not God, you're not controlling the world, then you will be smashed. If we take the term smash, what does it mean? It just means I want this and this happens. Or I don't want this and this happens. That's all it is. So it's going to happen. So the real question is how do I learn from the mercy of Krishna? Or how do I surrender to the will of God? Because once you line up with the will of God, you never really get smashed. Because what happens is, it's just a different opportunity to serve God. In other words, if your objective becomes the will of God, then the circumstance you're in is just another dictation by God on what He wants you to do. I remember one time I was getting smashed. And really getting smashed. And Niranjan Swami came to me. Because he's very compassionate. You know, when somebody gets smashed, you don't know what they can do. So he said, tolerate, and there'll be a fruit at the end. So in other words, what he saw is the circumstance was actually giving me something that's much more deeper than what's being taken away. Okay, one more question, because I follow the rules that I've set. Over here, the lady here. Last question. And then maybe we have just a few announcements. And then, yeah.
I just wanted to say something. You said you build a spiritual foundation, but then you have to go beyond it.
What's that?
You build a spiritual foundation, but even...
It's not a spiritual foundation. But we build up things to help us get spiritual. But eventually, you know, for example, in a traditional Vedic system, you build up family. A family is completely supportive of your spiritual life. But at a particular time, you have to go beyond that. So that which supports you at one stage of your life, and another stage of your life, it may be a burden. And it's like that with anything that's external, like you said. So all your designations, it's not that we don't do our dharma, we don't do our duties. We do our duties and we have our duties, but ultimately our eternal duty is to serve Krishna. And that's for in the Bhagavad Gita, it says sarva dharman parityaja. You know, everything has to be surrendered ultimately. Even at death. Everything will go at death. So I think the concept is that it's a very practical philosophy, Krishna consciousness. We build up a support system for our spiritual life to put the depth of spiritual life in there. But there may come a time with some of our support systems that we have to go even deeper. You know, let's say, what is the a home? Is, yes, we should have a very nice home and everything is lined up with our desires and our comforts. Right? And then in a Vedic system, let's say when someone actually took sannyas, then he leaves the home. And he goes for, you know, something else. But anyway, I have to think, I'm not satisfied by my answer because I quoted a book that I don't really remember so well. But I'm going to think about it, and tomorrow I'll just explain this more deeply, because bhakti is not about renunciation, it's about dedication, and I don't want that point to be confused. But I'll just think how to conceptualize it and express it tomorrow so it's not misunderstood. Okay? I'll just make a few announcements and just stay here. And then I think, is the Jagannath Prasad here?
No, it's probably...
Okay, so... What's that? Festival, it's okay. I'm starving. What can I do? This is Krishna doing what I give you. I won't do it. Okay, where is...